This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers. Fraser is traveling this week as I was traveling last week, so I have a special guest host. But before we get started, I want to thank our three sponsors for the night. First is Jamf Software, the makers of the great Castro Suite. Also sponsored by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. We have a special offer for out-of-school listeners. Go to squarespace.com/out-of-school, and when you check out, use the offer code PUPIL, P-U-P-I-L, for 10% off. A better web starts with your website. And by iDevBooks, a Finnish app design company that has been making iOS math apps for the past 5 years. So, our special guest this week is someone that's never been on the show. It's Stephen is now, how do you pronounce your last name?
Aquino.
Okay. Now, I've been following you on Twitter for, I guess a few years now. And, what I like about your writing is that you bring a perspective that really no one else is covering. So, give us a background on who you are.
Okay. I am a freelance writer. Before that, I worked with handicapped children, ages 3 to 5, and I did that for about 10 years, and during that time, I had a blog that I wrote, and I did that, as a hobby, and then I decided to make the jump into a full-time writer, and I did that in May 2013, so it's been about a year and a half that I've been doing this as my full-time gig, and I enjoy it a lot.
Well, before, I guess Marco Arment really started to talk about the importance of designing with accessibility in mind and Instapaper on one of his past show, Build and Analyze, on the 5x5 network, I had never really thought about it. When you look at the iPhone and the iPad, that's not what you think about. But through a lot of your writing and in your study and your use cases, you really show that Apple has done a great job here. And so you've really become, I guess I'll say, the authority on this topic. I mean, you write more than anyone else I know on this, and you really. Even the folks like John Gruber and Jason Snell, they really defer to your expertise here. So, where all are you writing now? And then really, how did you become the authority on this?
How I became an authority on this, we started with Marco and the magazine. It was like October, November of 2012, when he started the magazine, and I had this idea for an article. He had a post on his site about the app, and he said, if you have any ideas, send them over. So I had an idea about writing an article about technology and my old students and how we use iOS and stuff to help them. And so I wrote that article for the magazine. It was published January of last year, in issue 9, I think it was, and that article was a huge, huge success. It turned out that Apple got a hold of it, and they put it on their hot news site. And then I didn't do anything for a while until I, you know, did this full time. And it ended up that I just got offers from people on Twitter asking me to write for them about the iPhone and iPad and stuff like that in terms of accessibility. And my career has sort of skyrocketed since then.
Well, you know, you're doing quite a bit of work for Rene Ricci over at iMore now, currently, right?
Yes, I am. And I'm also doing a lot for Mac Stories. I have an article that I'm doing for them now. I've written for Macworld and Tidbits and TechCrunch and the Sweet Setup and all over the place.
Yeah, that's quite an impressive resume for a freelance writer, because that's really the who's who in the Apple tech community. So yeah, that's incredible. Before we move on, let's stop and thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Squarespace. Squarespace, as I mentioned, is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/out of school and use the offer code PUPIL. Now, Squarespace just rolled out version 7. It's really a big back-end change for the editing features. Chambers Daily, my website, is already on it. It's absolutely incredible. It's taking version 6 and really kind of tightening the belt. I'm really a big fan of it. Squarespace is scalable for if you have a one-page website all the way up to a huge site with e-commerce. You can pay by the year. You get a discount, and you get a free domain name included. Nothing to manage, nothing to host. You just worry about your content. They have great templates to use. All are responsive. It's not even really a mobile site. It's a responsive website. They've got a great app for the iPhone that allows you to blog from it. And they've got 24/7 support. Their support's fantastic. There have been times I've emailed them, and they've emailed back so quickly, I'm expecting it to be like kind of the canned message that says, hey, you know, we've received your request. But in reality, it's actually them responding. So if you're looking to start any kind of website for your school, for your business, for your ball team, Squarespace is the way to go. Go to squarespace.com/out of school and use the offer code PUPIL for 10% off. A better web starts with your website. Now, what is your experience with iOS? Like, what was your first iOS device?
My very first iOS device was actually the very first iPhone, which was then called iPhone OS. And, I remember going into the Apple Store during the time of the iPhone launching, and I was deciding between an iPhone and an iPod Touch. And I fell in love with the screen of the phone, because before then, at that time, I had a flip phone, and the accessibility of those old phones is not good with the small screen and the small fonts and all that stuff. And so when I saw the iPhone and you could scroll and the screen was high resolution and I mean, I could see everything, and I was just like, wow, you know, this is awesome. I'm going to fit an iPhone.
That's the exact opposite of, you know, that shows the lack of knowledge about accessibility on my part, because when I, you know, just if I had to make a guess which phone is more accessible, I would think the flip phone because of the actual keyboard, and you can feel the keys. But in reality, you know, Apple has that large screen, and they've taken it seriously. Now, you know, the early versions of the iPhone and the iPhone OS, which is now, you know, known as iOS, how, you know, from an accessibility standpoint, was it good? Is it similar to what we have now?
It's very, you know, it was very similar to what we have now. You know, I mean, obviously iPhone OS 1 and 2, you know, it didn't have the scope that it has now. But, you know, certainly the things that were in there were really great. I can't remember if VoiceOver was in iPhone OS 1 or 2. I can't remember when Apple added it. But I remember when I first saw it, and I was just like, wow, this is impressive. Just the tone and the accuracy, and, you know, I say it a lot that I think, you know, people talk about, you know, Apple and innovation with hardware and with, you know, the software in terms of, you know, iOS and like continuity and handoff and all these things that we have now. But I think, you know, an unheralded, you know, aspect of their innovation is, you know, these accessibility features are so deep and so well thought out that, you know, these are the things that help people like me and, you know, and others have an iPhone, you know, and an iPad. And without these things, you know, we'd be stuck on something else. And I don't think that the tech media really stops to think about it, but it's true.
You know, often the news media, they focus on, you know, what are the big features? Something like Touch ID, or you know, it's gold, or it's got more storage. But the accessibility features, you know, those, you know, you could argue, does that necessarily, you know, if you look at an ROI perspective from Apple's bottom line, if they never did anything accessibility wise, they probably don't, you know, make drastically less money. But this is where Apple's, you know, their soul and their culture, that making this accessible is important for them. And I think it's also, you know, I would dare say that only Apple can do this, because they control the hardware and the software. And so they can make it be a seamless experience, and they can sweat the details. You know, when I think back to like some of the Lenovo PCs years ago, they would have those fingerprint sensors, but then, I mean, you know, there was no integration across the OS. It would unlock the computer, but you couldn't use it to unlock apps. And then, but you know, you can have things like that in iOS because Apple controls every bit of it. You know, so I think that's, you know, when you talk about, you know, if you talk about, say, well, Apple's just, you know, they charge way too much for their devices, or they should get rid of 16 gig devices, you know, just because they're wanting you to upgrade. And we would all maybe agree with that. But this, to me, their focus on accessibility, even from the beginning, is kind of shows their DNA.
Right. I mean, I totally agree with you. I, you know, I say it time and again, but, you know, I'm not that familiar with Android or Windows phones, so I can't speak to theirs, but I really think that Apple is leading at this, because, I mean, if you just go into accessibility, and you could argue that they've stuffed a lot of stuff in there and it's getting kind of bloated, but be that as it may, you know, if you look at the options that they have and how they work, like hearing aids and dynamic text and speech speak screen and text to speech and you know, then it doesn't just extend to the accessibility features in and of themselves. You know, you take something like Touch ID that I've had on my iPhone 5S, and I've got an iPhone 6 now. So, you know, Touch ID is so much easier for me to unlock my phone than to have to swipe over and having to, you know, enter in my passcode, you know, because sometimes the numbers are hard to see and I hit the wrong key or something. So even consumer facing feature like Touch ID, the hardware and the software, that is accessibility as well. And I think that's awesome.
You know, you were pretty critical, I think, early on of iOS 7. And I want to talk about that before we move on to iOS 7. I want to thank our next sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Jamp Software. Jamp provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They have a great app called Casper Focus, which places these technologies directly into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. This is not an app for IT folks. It's for teachers. It's an app on their iPad that allows them to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Now, if you want to learn more about Jamp software, go to our website, outofschool.net. This is episode 108. And they have a special link for you to use there. And that lets the folks at Jamp know that you came to them from our show. And if you happen to be working with a reseller directly with Jamps already, let them know that you heard about them from our podcast. And that helps lets them know that their support is working and their sponsorship is working. So, again, thanks to Jamp for sponsoring the show this week. You know, iOS 7 was a dramatic change in the user interface, I guess, appearance of iOS. What was like that like in the beginning for you?
I remember seeing iOS 7 at WWDC and thinking, oh my God, that's like, how am I gonna see this? And I didn't use the betas all summer until the GM hit, and it took a long time to get comfortable with it. And to this day, you know, we're on iOS 8.1. The same things that I complained about with iOS 7, like, you know, Apple insisting on using text as buttons and, you know, using small font for, like, the App Store. You know, that's still, irks me, because I think that, you know, when iOS 6 shipped and people were talking about iOS 7, like, people were talking about skeuomorphism and how it was getting old and things looked, you know, ugly and they had to change things. But when I look at iOS 6, you know, you could tell that a button is a button, because it had a shape and it had a shadow, and so I knew that, oh, that's where I was supposed to tap, because I tap this and it does this. With iOS 7 and 8, I'm familiar enough with iOS at this point that I know the paradigms, you know, how they do things, but still, you know, having those text as button things really suck. And I really still feel that Apple prioritized best aesthetic over actual use case.
Well, and, you know, I think you make a great point. You know, like there are things about iOS 6 that seem old to me and seemed out of touch with kind of modern app design and modern user interfaces. But for you, you know, those changes directly change your ability to use the device. You know, it's not just a matter of personal preference. Do I like skeuomorphic design? Do I not? I mean, that is your ability to use the device that impacts that. So that definitely kind of puts a whole new perspective on, you know, personal preference.
Right. And so, you know, when people were talking about iOS 7 and even before that with iOS 6 and how all this skeuomorphism has to go, everything has to be thrown out, I was like, no, you guys don't understand. You guys are thinking about, you know, you guys are thinking about it from, I don't want to say the wrong perspective, but I think it was short-sighted, no pun intended, to say that.
Well, yeah, because it's, again, I go back to, it's not a matter of, do I like the look of this or not? Is this pleasant to my eyes or not? It's just really a usability standpoint. Now, as iOS 7 came along, did it get better?
Yeah, it did. But in fact, it didn't really come along until 8 shipped. I wrote an article for Mac Stories on all the changes in 8 in terms of accessibility, and I talked about the design, and I think they did a lot in 8 to improve the design. I know the share sheet icons are a lot easier to see. The dynamic text is clearer and more precise than in 7. So, you know, I think they've come a really long way in a short time, and I'm happy about that. And at this point, with everything I've said about 6 and the old way, I can't see myself using 6 again.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like you with iOS 8, you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting usability and accessibility, but also the new design. Before we move on, let's take our final sponsor of the night. This is the fine folks at iDevBooks. Now, iDevBooks is a Finnish app design company that's been making iOS math apps for the past 5 years. They have 26 math apps from Column Edition to Polynomial Long Edition. Now, they were selected as one of the top 20 best education apps from Edudemic, and they said that their apps are focused on making concepts easy to learn rather than being bogged down with bells, whistles, and ads. And I think for an app, that's going to be the highest praise you can get. Listeners of this podcast can get any one of their apps for free by using the feedback form at idevbooks.com. So it's idevbooks.com. And let them know that you heard about this offer on Out of School, and let them know which app you want, and they will send you a code for a free app. Now, your email address will only be used to send you the code, and this offer is valid until the end of the calendar year, but they only get a limited number of free coupons from Apple, so please hurry. So again, idevbooks.com, ask them for a free app and let them know that you heard about them on the show, and we'll have a link to their website in the show notes at outofschool.net. Now, what is your perspective? We kind of talked about iOS 8, that really it's come a long way. How the things like extensions and the new sharing, how does that work for, from an accessibility standpoint? Are those things very usable?
Yes. I found the one password extension should be awesome. I haven't really used that bit extensions. I'm only using a couple. But, the ones that I do use, I find them to be fine. Things like handoff and continuity, those sort of things, I can't use because my Mac, is older, so I don't have the opportunity to sort of figure out how easy it is to swipe from the lock screen into apps and stuff, but as I said, I think that iOS 8 is, they've come a long way, and I'm happy.
Are certain of the built-in apps harder to use than others?
FaceTime. FaceTime is terrible.
How come?
Well, because if you open FaceTime on your iPad or iPhone, the controls and everything are layered on top of the camera, so you're trying to look at who you're trying to call, but then at the same time you're looking through to yourself, and that really distorts the contrast, and it's really awful.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. How about the Mail app? Is it well designed from an accessibility standpoint?
Yeah, it is. I use dynamic text on my phone, and so I have it set high. All my email is easy free to read. It also works well with VoiceOver and SpeakScreen, so if you turn that on with a two-finger swipe from the top, the iPhone will read your email, and I think it's good.
You know, Of course, we've got new iPad hardware coming out. I guess by the time this show comes out, it'll already been released. But the current lineup, you have an iPad, the original iPad Air. So, you know, backing off of the software perspective, how is the hardware from an accessibility standpoint? Is there anything that could be improved, or do they do a pretty good job?
No, I actually think the iPad Air is hardware wise, I couldn't ask for anything more. I have an iPad Air from last year, and the only thing that I want out of it from an accessibility standpoint is Touch ID. But I don't think that, you know, paying the extra $600 for the iPad Air 2 is worth Touch ID. People ask me all the time why I got an Air, because they think that the Retina Mini being smaller would be easier to hold and stuff. But I think the iPad Air is really the sweet spot in terms of it's thin and it's light, and you get the larger screen. So I don't think, you know, it's, you get everything. You get thin, you get light, and you get the screen. And I could not see myself without an Air. Now, if Apple does the iPad Pro that everybody's talking about, you know, that might be a different story down the line. But as of now, I'm a super happy iPad Air guy.
You know, you thinking back to your days in the classroom, if you had a student that needed the device that was the most accessible to them, so you would recommend the Air over the Mini just because you can simply make the text bigger.
Right.
Well, I think it's important for schools to remember that even if they, you know, let's say they're doing a one-to-one with iPad Minis, they may need to use iPad Air for certain students, and it'll definitely be worth the premium because the device will be that much more accessible to them.
Well, the school that I was at, we bought a whole bunch of iPad 2s, and even now to this day, the IT folks installed iOS 8 on them, and you know the hardware's not that good, you know, A5, all that stuff, but they're very happy with it still. You know, I hear things like, yeah, we've still got iPad 2, but it's great. You know, there's certain apps that we use and they do the job, and we don't, you know, we don't want to spend to get an iPad Air, you know.
Well, yeah, in you certainly pay as devices get older and new software comes out, you certainly kind of pay that debt back. You know, you can go cheap on the front end, get the cheaper devices, but then from a usability standpoint, you know, the i5 is struggling now, particularly on iOS 8. I know developers would like to see that device or that processor go away, but it is, you know, since the original Air is going to hang on, or I'm sorry, the original Mini is going to hang on for at least another year at the $249 price point, you know, it looks like we're just going to have to deal with it. And I could even see it hanging on even two more years if they can get the price down to $199 or even $149. But, Stephen, you know, this has been, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed reading you around the internet. Anytime you post a new link, I always send it to Pocket and always make sure to read it because you bring a perspective that really no one else has. And I think that's really a great niche for you because you have a unique perspective, and a lot of people, they're just regurgitating the same, basic press releases over and over. So I think you do a fantastic job. Where can people find you around the internet if they want to learn more about your work?
Okay. Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Stephen_Aquino. That's Aquino. And you can find me on my personal site, stevensblog.org. Just a site that I do for fun. Sort of your Daring Fireball-ish type of site. And, if you follow me online, I will certainly tweet things as I write things and they're out. That's it, I think.
We'll have links to all of Stephen's contact information, his Twitter, his blog, on the show notes. Again, want to thank the fine folks at Jamp Software, Squarespace, and iDevBooks for sponsoring the show this week. Fraser, again, is traveling this week, and we'll be back together next week. But Stephen, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And we'll have a new show the next week. And have a good week, everybody.